Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you have a great weekend. DeMarco, you are a part of our very last morning show this morning, at least in this form, that LZ is going to the afternoons with George Sedano, and Key and Jay Will and Zubin will be here, as will I, starting at 5 o'clock next Monday. So this is the last morning show in this form, so I appreciate you kind of holding it down for me last week.
Is this like the official Jump the Shark?
I guess, yeah. Well, you just have to sit in that chair for another 3 hours. We've got three more hours that I need you to sit there. But, yeah.
Is this the last episode of the sitcom?
Yes, this is the one where we get a little tear in our eye and we hug each other.
The grand finale.
The grand finale, yes.
I love it. Jorge, let's do it like Seinfeld. Let's wind up in jail.
Yeah, deal. Deal. As long as I'm out by Monday morning at 5 and I can start doing my deal there. So it'll be good. Key's actually going to join us a little bit later on this morning. He's going to come on at 8:15, and we'll talk a little bit about his new show and talk some football with him as well. But right now, DeMarco, Mookie Betts last night had a night, and this is what you would typically call a career night, right? You hit three home runs in one game. That is a career night. The deal is, though, this is the sixth time that Mookie Betts has hit three home runs in one game. He joins Johnny Mize. He joins Sammy Sosa as the only players in Major League Baseball history to have done that six times, and it was just flat out a show last night, wasn't it?
It's must see TV. It's the stuff that, you know, keeps you coming back to the ballpark. And yeah, I guess, you know, I start to figure out or try to figure out the mechanics of it, like, why is he so good? So listening to his post game comments, and I love what I hear. All he does is work. He works hard. I mean, he's not surprised by this at all. And I'm coming around to what you said. I mean, there's going to be more of these. I tend not to get too far ahead of myself with Mookie Betts. I mean, you've already made history, but it's under 1,000 games. There's bound to be more of these. It could be the next time out with this guy, but he's a special player. He's worth every penny. I just hope that some other guys on the team, you know, aren't threatened by this to the point where it affects their game. And you know what I'm talking about. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, what Cody Bellinger is kind of lost right now. He did hit the ball hard a couple of times last night. We'll come to him in a second. I'm glad you talked about Mookie doing it in less than 1,000 games. He's doing it in way less than 1,000 games. Last night was Mookie Betts' 813th career Major League game, okay? 813. The only other two guys that have hit three home runs in a game six times are Sammy Sosa and Mize, like I mentioned a minute ago. It took Johnny Mize 1,884 games, so 1,000 more games to do what Betts has already done. Sammy Sosa, we all know Sammy. Sammy's got some stuff for sure, but yeah. Sammy Sosa could also hit the you-know-what out of a baseball. Sammy Sosa could absolutely smoke it. It took Sammy Sosa 2,354 games, nearly triple the amount of games that Mookie Betts has done it in. And I'm not saying that you do the math and all of a sudden that, you know, Mookie's going to do this 18 times. It's not like that. It's not a straight line like that, but it is probably pretty safe to say that he's going to do it 9 or 10 because he's got six in 800. If he plays the 12 years he's got left on his Dodger deal and gets one every other year, okay, that's six more.
Well, what's funny? 12. I mean, if you're another major league team and you're playing the Dodgers and Mookie Betts and he gets two off you, there's no chance I'm giving him a shot at a third. Really, I'm serious. You would get the treatment for me from here on out. I think it's possible even if you're trying to, you know, let him walk or not give him anything to hit. He's good enough to find something to drive over the fence for another home run, but there would be no way I'd give him the opportunity for another three home run game.
Yeah, especially in a game like last night.
Yeah.
They're just getting their clocks cleaned, and they're still throwing him very, very hittable pitches. To your point, though, there's going to be situations where you're going to have to pitch to him. It's a tight game. There's guys on base, and you just can't decide to pitch around him. I thought that it certainly wasn't the three home run portion of it, but it just kind of painted the whole picture. When he came up for his final at-bat of the night, after having hit the three home runs, he'd had four at-bats. He'd walked once and hit four or three home runs. So he comes up, and he gets an infield hit. He hit a big swing, kind of a dribbler up the third baseline, and the next thing you know, he's standing on first base without a throw, an infield single. So you're telling me a guy that just put the ball over the fence three times is also so fast that if he doesn't hit the ball hard, you can't throw him out on the infield? Have fun with him.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about a dude, like you said, three home runs in one game, 5'9", 180.
Yeah.
Just something does not compute. So perfect comes to mind, but, you know, I love his approach to the plate. You mentioned Barry Bonds, or who was it? Was it Michael Thompson or you? You were talking about Barry Bonds at he didn't swing at a bad pitch all season.
Yeah,
that was you. I mean, Mookie Betts, I don't think, swings at bad pitches. I'm sure he didn't last night. He always has an opportunity, puts himself an opportunity to make something happen, you know, at the plate. And, you know, he's great in the field, too. I mean, wow. I mean, what a pickup. But, you know, it's good. The individual achievement is great. But the overall thing that I love the most is the Dodgers got another W, which is the most important thing. And this is without, you know, half of their power guys or the guys you're counting on to help drive in runs are still trying to find it.
Yeah, they finally had a night where they looked like themselves offensively. They hit six home runs. It helps when one guy chips in three of them, to be sure. But Austin Barnes got his first home run of the year. Corey Seager hit another one. You know, Corey Seager is a really good player. I'm the president of the Corey Seager fan club. I don't know if we've gone over this with you in here, DeMarco. I think he's one of the most important players on this team. He just can't stay healthy, and that's an issue. I mean, like, you know, availability is the best ability. You can't help the team from the training room, all that stuff. And he gets hurt a lot, but he hit another one last night. Austin Barnes hit his first of the season last night. They score 11 runs. They beat him up pretty good last night. Cody Bellinger, 0-for-3. He's batting .165. He's slugging. Cody Bellinger is slugging .266. Max Muncy, who's had 70 home runs the last 2 years, back-to-back seasons of 35 home runs, he's batting .169 and slugging .351. They're just those two guys. Jock Peterson, another guy, 0-for-4, yeah, batting .167. These are important players for the Dodgers. And they're 13-7, and they hit six home runs last night, and those three guys are ice cold. This is all good news.
Wow. Who's more important right now to their team, LeBron or Mookie Betts? Right now?
Well, you know, it's a good question. No. There's not a person walking around right now that is more important to what their team is trying to get done than LeBron James.
Yeah.
Nobody.
If there's an MVP of sport, he would win it almost every year. But just tell me this, Trav. I mean, a 12-year, $365 million contract. That's Mookie Betts. Where's the pressure coming from? If you give me a 12-year deal for $365 million, I'm going to be as relaxed as I ever been. I mean, everything is taken care of. My grandkids are taken care of. I have no worries. The only worry I have is an outside fastball. You know, that's it. That's my only worry.
it's interesting, isn't it, DeMarco? Because I think you fall, not you, but people fall into one of two categories. This idea that when you hit the jackpot like that, when you now have $300+ million in the bank, my Travis Rogers, my personal tendency would be to, yeah, man, I'm good.
I'm really good. Look what I earned. Yeah,
right. Bring me that second appetizer. Yeah, you know what I am. Bring that. That looks good. Bring me one of those. I will have dessert tonight. That sounds good.
Okay.
But there are other guys, and I think that thankfully for professional sports teams and the guys that are responsible for paying the Mookie Bettses and Mike Trouts and LeBron Jameses of the world, is that if you are the guy that's going to work hard enough to get a $300 million contract, you don't just turn it off the second you get it. There's something inside your brain that is telling you more, work harder. And Mookie's one of those dudes.
I thought it was like a billionaire sponsoring a great artist. You don't have to worry about anything except your art.
Yeah.
Go sculpt, go paint, go hit a baseball, go sack quarterbacks. Don't worry about anything. You're done. Your whole life is taken care of for the rest of your life and the rest of your kids' lives. Just go be the best that you can possibly be. That's where you want to be as an athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sometimes like when the guys get paid, and I just read this on ESPN, some guys struggle when they get the big contract and they put too much pressure on themselves to perform. Well, maybe you're not as good as your contract says you are, and you know that, and that's why you struggle. But certain guys can flourish within it. Once you get the big dough, now I am freed of all the other stuff that I used to worry about, and all I get to do now is just work on my craft. That, to me, is where you want to be as an athlete.
Yeah, it's interesting because we're talking about this money, and the guy that has not got the money that we can, I think, probably both pretty safely assume is going to get it before too long is Cody Bellinger. He's lost right now. He's 0 for 3 last night, did hit a couple of balls hard, and I'm not saying that just to say it because, oh, hey, but it's meaningful. You need to hit the ball hard a couple of times to kind of start to break out it. I think he's very close, but he's 0 for 3. He's batting a .165. He really does not look like himself. And you have to wonder if that idea of, hey, that money that Mookie has, I was supposed to be the guy that was the man on this team. I was the guy that's the reigning MVP. I was the guy that was the most popular Dodger, or the guy that was the most important Dodger offensively that's not a pitcher. I was the guy that was going to be the flag bearer for this organization for the next 10 years. And they went out and got Mookie Betts. And Mookie just shows up as a made man. Mookie just shows up as one of the best players in baseball with a resume that is complete. He's won a World Series. He's won an MVP. He's been an All-Star. He's won a batting title, Silver Slugger, all this. There's nothing left for Mookie to do. So he can kind of just be the guy that we're talking about, just be that brilliant artist and do what he does. And all of a sudden, when I'm getting ready to assume that role and they just drop somebody in here, and it's not like he's here for 5 minutes. He's here for the next 12 years.
Yeah.
That could kind of throw you for a little bit of a loop, I think.
I'm sure. It's happened to every athlete, and they appear to be Superman and Iron Man, but, you know, when your fans or some kids are screaming, hey, Corey, can you – Bellinger, can you come here? And you walk over and you reach for the pen, and they go, can you get Mookie to sign this? It's like, okay. You know, it does hurt a little bit. I mean, that does take some adjustment to getting used to. But, you know, I'm going to go back to something Adam Kennedy said when we had him on. It only takes one game.
Yeah.
One game to get going, to where you get that feel, you get the sound of the ball off the bat, and you figure it out. And then, like you said, if you have Bellinger playing like the MVP like he did last season with Mookie Betts, that's a scary squad coming the other direction, man.
Yeah, and last night he striped a couple of balls, just absolutely smoked. That's when you're thinking, all right, the world is conspiring against me because I can't hit it any harder than that, and I still can't get on base. It's going to be another one of those little flare doubles like he had the other night, one or two of those, and he'll be back. He's too good of a player for this to go on for too much longer. We'll talk about all of this with Bob Nightingale from USA Today, covers MLB. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Dodger bats finally woke up last night. Mookie Betts with 3 home runs. Dodgers hit 6 of them collectively, went over the Padres last night. Joining us to talk a little MLB is Bob Nightingale, MLB columnist for USA Today. Bob, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Thank you, guys.
Good. It's good to have you. Bob, let's start right here. When should I start to get worried about Cody Bellinger and Max Muncy and the fact that they're both way under 200 and not doing much?
Yeah, way too early. I mean, the Dodgers are in the playoffs, so as long as these guys are ready to go by, you know, late September, they're fine. You know, it's just look at the batting averages across baseball. I think it's .235 right now, a major low in history. So, yeah, some guys, they get slow starts anyway. Now it's magnified because it's a short season. But, you know, these guys have the resumes, credentials to do it. But, yeah, I wouldn't worry at all.
Well, thank you, Bob, for talking me off the ledge with those guys. So how should I feel, or how do you feel about what you saw out of Mookie Betts, a performance like that? I mean, should I believe that, or is this just a guy getting hot early?
Well, that's Mookie Betts, and that's why, people talk about Mike Trout. You know, here's the National League version now of Mike Trout. I mean, this guy can do everything. Yeah, there's a reason, again, the biggest contract in baseball history. Reason why the Red Sox are still, fans are going crazy, the fact you didn't keep him. So just a special talent on and off the field, great leader, and obviously not going to get 3 home runs tonight, but certainly he's one of the top 2-3 players in all of baseball.
Bob, you mentioned that Major League Baseball average across the board is .235, an all-time low. And I'm just curious, I'm somebody that's been a baseball fan for my entire life, and you've been covering this sport for a long time. Is it as fun to watch? I mean, I find myself watching these games. I still love it. I still can find some excitement in it once in a while. But when there are so few hits on any given night, it's just it's different for me. I don't love it nearly as much. What about you?
No, that's the hard part. Is there's so much little action. What is that? I think now like 3 minutes and 20 seconds or something between when the ball is actually put in play. So, yeah, still way too many, you know, strikeouts, home runs, walks without guys putting in play. And that's a problem they've been fighting for years now. You know, I don't know what they can do. It'll be interesting. Last time, you know, was 68 when the batting average was so low and they end up, you know, lowering the mound. I'd be curious to see if they do something or they worry about that with the pitchers, do something with the strike zone. But, yeah, something needs to be changed because some of these games just get so dull. I mean, you're not even seeing guys moving runners over or, you know, laying down bunt or anything like that.
Is it tougher this year than – I mean, it's a weird year for sports, period, for the country, for the world. But I guess if this were a normal season, it'd be easier to pick a front runner or a couple of World Series contenders. Is it different for you right now with how baseball is and how it's going to go for to compete for a World Series?
Well, it is different just because, I mean, say the Dodgers, they could have the best record in all of baseball. You know, what does it really mean? You get the number one seed, but there's no advantage. I mean, as long as you get in the playoffs, that's it. But, yeah, you like the veteran teams. You like the teams, you know, the leadership and been around. So I think that's what we're seeing the Dodgers, you know, winning again. You know, besides the talent, the Chicago Cubs, they've been together through all this playoff runs in the World Series. You know, those teams have an advantage, I think. Same with the Yankees. So I think, you know, even if it's a 162-game season, it'd probably be the same favorites, you know, Dodgers, Yankees, you know, Oakland A's.
Bob Nightingale joining us here on the morning show. He covers MLB for USA Today. Bob, the Cardinals have played 5 games. Other teams in baseball have played 20. How in the world are they going to fix that? How are they going to make that up?
Yeah, they can't make up 60. They're hoping to make up, you know, get to 50-game season and then go by winning percentage. I mean, for instance, you know, like you said, they played 5 games. They played 2 games on Saturday, 1 Sunday, 2 more Monday, 1 Tuesday, 2 more Wednesday. So, you know, three double hitters there in 5 days. So I think they can get to 50 some, but I think it's asking too much to get to 60. You know, even if it's 17 double hitters, it's way too much.
It seems like there's 2 baseball seasons. There's what's going on and guys trying to win the World Series, and then there's what's happening to the Houston Astros. You know what I mean? It just seems like that's a never-ending story. I guess we could all assume or just agree that baseball got it wrong. Is there an end to this, you know, with this whole fiasco with the Astros?
No, I mean, I think it'll fade away in time, and particularly that's happening in our country. The pandemic is like, how big is it really that some guy stole baseball signs in the big picture? But, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it starts to fade away after this year. But, you know, actually, you know, you got fans next year, or at least you know, we hope so. Maybe then they take their turns to boo, and then, then it dies down. It's almost like the steroid guys in baseball. People were booing when they first came around, you know, whether it's a, you know, Bonds or whoever, and then it kind of dies down. So I think the same thing here. And the Astros, you know, still a very talented team, but just so banged up. I mean, we got 9 rookies in that bullpen. I think 8 or 9 guys have already made their major league debut. You know, no Gerrit Cole, he's gone with the Yankees. No Justin Verlander, who knows if he'll be able to pitch this year. So just without Zach Greinke, they'd be really in trouble.
Bob Nightingale joining us here on the morning show. Bob, what do you think, kind of a two-part question here, what do you think personally of the new rules this year, having the DH in both leagues, starting a runner at second base, and relief pitchers having to face 3 guys or end the inning, and which of those 3 rules will survive and it'll just be the way that we do it moving forward post-pandemic?
Well, the 3-batter minimum rule for sure it goes, because that's already, bargained for in a basic agreement, so that's staying around. I would think that the 2 sides would say, okay, let's have a DH, need more offense. You know, you're talking about, you know, pitchers not hitting at all this year, pitchers getting hurt anyway, so why take that chance? I think the extra inning rule will change to maybe the 12th inning. I think the players like it, I think the fans like it, but maybe not the 10th. Let's do it in the 12th inning. But the 7 inning double hitter, I think that goes. You know, it's possible maybe they go 9 innings game 1, 7 game 2. But I think, you know, just for history books and everything else, you know, let's make it equitable and just go back to 9-inning double hitters.
I don't know what the big deal is. I like the DH. I think it's fun. I hope it stays around.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah.
I don't
yeah,
need
I mean,
to watch.
Yeah, I mean, just weren't hitting anyway. So, you know, nobody knew how to hit. Nobody knew how to bunt. So, yeah, I do think that stays around. I really do.
Do you think that the Angels can get back into this, Bob? They got off to such a slow start. They've been a little bit better of late. They're back to, you know, a handful of games under 500. And, you know, basically half the league is going to make the playoffs. Are the Angels going to be in that half?
They could. You know, it's too bad that Ross Stripling trade did not go through. They would have really helped them. Same with Jock Peterson. You know, that got pulled off the table at the last second. So I think they do have a chance just because the AL West is, you know, it's a very mediocre division. Let me take away the Oakland A's. A lot of mediocrity there. So all you got to do is finish second. You know, I don't think they get a wild card spot, but if you can get close to 500, then you may be in. You know, a 500 record could get you in there. So I think they'll stay around. I really do. Particularly with that offense. That offense is so powerful. I know in the first spring training, scouts were saying, as a good offense as they've seen again in a number of years.
Bob, you know, baseball is a tough sport. I don't have to tell you that. There's a lot of pressure in the game, period. Good team, good player, bad player. Do you subscribe to the LA Dodgers or teams like that? It's World Series or bust. Do you believe in that sort of theory or subscribe to something like that, that sort of talk?
You know, I don't believe in it just because it takes so much to get there. I mean, the Atlanta Braves, yeah, they should have won or a couple more World Series, but they won 14 straight division titles, you know, in the World Series five times. You know, so, you know, are we saying the Miami Marlins because they won two World Series there in 4 years? You'd rather watch that and, you know, go from first to last, you know, all the time and not be a contender except for every, you know, 5 years or so. You know, I wouldn't want that. So I think that Dodgers' expectations are certainly World Series or bust. I mean, I think anything less would be disappointment just because of, or they won a couple National League pennants. But just to have that consistency, I didn't think we'd ever see a team win 14 straight titles like the Atlanta Braves, but the Dodgers certainly, look like that's a team that could pull this off, depending on what happens here with the San Diego Padres for their future.
Bob Nightingale covers baseball for USA Today. Bob, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Sir, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
You got it, Bob. Yeah, DeMarco, I love the DH in both leagues, too. I don't need to see, Ross Stripling swing a bat. That's not something I need to see. I'm fine with it. We'll have the guys that pitch. We'll have the guys that hit along the way. I want to do this. I want to get your thoughts on some of those other rules because most of them, I think, are brilliant, but there's one other rule I'd like to see them add to Major League Baseball to improve some offense. I'll tell you what it is next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. So we agree, DeMarco, that the DH should be in the National League. It's first of all, it's goofy that you're playing with two different sets of rules in the same sport. That over here, we're doing it one way. Over there, we're doing it a different way. I pick one and go with it, and I would rather you pick the DH. So I know that you're with me on that. What do you make of the extra inning rule where they, in the 10th inning, they put a runner on second base to start the inning? You like that?
Yeah, because I think it shortens the game. Sometimes baseball has the tendency to go on forever. It seems like no one can get the final run or the final out or whatever. So, yeah, put a runner on second base. And, you know, it's like the same in college football. You know, when they do the overtime rule, they keep moving the ball closer to the goal line, to end the games. It makes it easier to score. It puts the pressure on the other team to stop you or whatever. So, yeah, I like that rule. I think that's a great rule. I wonder why it took so long to implement.
Yeah, well, excuse me. I agree with you. First of all, because baseball is dumb and they refuse to change things. I mean, keep in mind, they were the last league to come up with instant replay, which is dumb. I mean, it's easy to do. Let's get the calls right. And it took them forever to get there. So why they didn't do it, who knows, because they're just weird like that. But what it does, too, number one, it ends the game, which is the idea of this. That a baseball game, a nine-inning baseball game, has already taken us 3 hours. I don't need to go much beyond that. You know, let's end this thing. And it brings an element of excitement right away, right?
That all
of a sudden, there is strategy involved. Do we bunt this guy over? Do you walk the guy to first base to set up a double play? How do you pitch this guy? Like, there's instant decision-making as opposed to, okay, let's see what happens. You're instantly putting some pressure on the defense, which I think is really good. The pitchers that have to face three guys before you can pitching change again, I think is brilliant. It's sped up the game. And look, you should have to pitch to more than one guy unless the inning ends. It just makes too much sense. I like that one too. Here's what I'd like to see him do. We were just talking with Bob, and you and I have been talking about the Dodgers all week, and Cody Bellinger batting .150 and Max Muncy batting .150 and all these guys. Well, Bob said it a minute ago. The batting average of Major League Baseball, everybody collectively, is .235. That is an all-time low. Okay, .235, which just, I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, we're talking about 24% of the time somebody gets a hit, 1 out of 4. That's not good. That's the ball has to be put in play. The ball, you have to have runners on base, because what makes baseball exciting is guys on base. It puts pressure on the defense, plays at bags. That's what's fun. The shift has the reason that guys are batting .235 is because of the shift. The reason that guys can't get hits the way that they used to, where 300 used to be a really significant accomplishment, and now we're probably looking at something in the 270s that's equitable to that, is because of the shift. I know that Cody Bellinger doesn't hit the ball to third base. Why would I ever put a third baseman there, right? Well, I'm gonna move him to the other side of the field, which is fine by me. I get that, but what I think you need to do, you can put your guys in the infield wherever you want them. You want your third base to play second base? And put two guys over there, great. The only thing I would change about the shift, you can move them around, but all four guys on that infield need to start the play with their feet on the dirt. That will take away. That okay. will take away, because I don't know how much of the game you got to see last night, DeMarco. There were two ground balls to right field where they threw guys out at first base, because right. they put the shortstop or the second baseman or the third baseman basically in shallow right field to just take away hits to right field. That's dumb. We need guys on base.
Well, why, you know, and maybe it's, you can explain it to me as a baseball guy. Why can't the hitters just adjust? You see it's in front of you. You see the shift. Mm-hmm. Is it that hard to go the other way?
Yes, no.
I guess because the shift and the way you're being pitched. I
think that's part of it. The shift, the way that you're being pitched. And yes, all of, you know, you could probably teach Max Muncy, hey, look, let's drop a few bunts down at third base and let's get the guys to have to come back over here, because we don't want to give a guy a free base every single right. time. That's one way to do it. But here's the other part of it, too, that I think that's kind of only a half measure. I don't hate what you're saying that, you know, baseball needs, let's drop a few bunts down, let's shoot a few balls over there and make them put that guy back over there and open up the field. Do we want to watch a bunch of bunts? Do I want to watch Cody Bellinger bunt? No.
Well, I thought the number one rule in baseball, at least that's what Bull Durham taught me, was hit them where they ain't.
No, okay. let me ask you this. I hear you, and you're not wrong, but do you want to watch Cody Bellinger drop a bunt down the third baseline, or do you want to watch him dig in there, screw his cleats into the ground, and try to hit it over the damn scoreboard?
I'd much rather chicks dig the long ball. I guess that was a commercial. I'm with you. I'd rather see that. But if you're going to, you know, shift me to death to where that guy can't get a hit anyway, then I wouldn't mind a few bunts. Keep them honest if you can. You know, I always, you know, the when I hear people, you know, railing at the shift, I wish the shift was gone in baseball. Why don't you go to the guy at the plate? He's a professional. Lay down mm-hmm. a bunt. Hit it where they ain't and make them pay for it. That's what I always thought.
Yeah, it's a good answer. I'm looking for runs. I'm looking for action. I'm looking for things that are exciting. And I'm not – the bunting is just – it's like, oh, my God, really?
Then eliminate the shift. Take away the shift.
Or just put them on the dirt. If I have to put guys – if I want to put a guy behind the one that drives me crazy is that ball that's just scorched up the middle – and there's just a guy standing behind second base, and he picks it up and throw him out. Okay, I can live with that, because if he's on the dirt, fine. But if you've got two right fielders or two second basemen or whatever it is, and a ball just gets tattooed into that spot, that should be a hit. And if the guys are on the dirt, then that still is a hit.
Okay, then I got one more axe to grind about the DH, and it just depends on how you see baseball. And I've never gone to a game to score it. I don't know if you have or family members do. They go there and they score games, but I am not there to see the manager manage. That's what I used to hear out of the NL. Uh-huh. And when the pitcher has to hit, there's more strategy involved. Well, that's why I think I like AL ball better, because they just trot out a lineup and I get to see home runs because they have DHs. So I don't know if that it flies in the face of baseball purists, but I am not there to see managers chess game against the other manager. I'm there to see the guys hit, throw, run, and, you know, basically see baseball, not guys managing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've kind of come around on this. For a long time, I was kind of on the other side on that, and I agree with you. I don't want to watch a sacrifice. I don't want to watch a – and here's the other part, too. Sometimes, and they say, you know, the National League, there's far more strategy involved because the pitcher's got to hit. Do I take him out? Do I put a bat in here? And I got to make that decision. Well, sometimes, too, you're taking your best players off the field. Let's say Dustin May is just grinding guys up, right? Just right. Absolutely flaming guys, but you're behind 1-0. And now we're in the fifth inning, and his spot is coming up. Well, I got to take him out because I got to score some runs. I got to put somebody in there that can swing the bat as opposed to just going up there and having him bunt or whatever. I got to take him out because I got to try to run into one. I don't want Dustin May coming out of this game. He's doing great, but now the decision has been removed from my hands. I've never really liked that either.
You know, I spent years in St. Louis. I spent years watching Tony La Russa just drive me crazy with endless pitching changes. I'm so glad now there's a rule. Like you said, you have to face three guys before you come out.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the Tony La Russa rule. Sincerely, that's one of those. Now, we're done. We're not doing this. We're not going to have an inning, DeMarco, that lasts an hour. We're not going to do that.
God.
It's just interminable. It's awful.
Tony, Game of Thrones is getting ready to start. Come on, man.
How about this? You want to feel old for a second, my friend?
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Magic Johnson, who turned 61 today.
You're kidding me. Magic is 60?
61.
Wow.
61.
I mean, I guess that's great on all fronts, considering, you know, his career and what's gone on, that he reached 61. Wow.
We all have our favorite athletes when we're kids, and Magic was certainly on that very short list for me. Magic will always be that guy with a huge smile running up and down with the Lakers. He could be 161, and in my mind's eye, he's going to be 25 years old. I'll never think of him a different way.
Yep, that smile. Forever, forever, forever. Yeah, I caught a glimpse of Shaq and Charles. The same is not true for them.
No, it is not. No, Magic still, you know, Magic has a house down near where I live, so you'll see him around town every once in a while. And he is just the most electric personality I've ever laid eyes on in my life. Everybody loves Magic Johnson.
He hit me in the face with the ball, Travis.
What?
I was lucky enough to be on the floor. I wasn't really playing. We were just messing around, and he was there. You know, he's holding court. He's being Magic. At the Sports Club LA, this is way back when I was doing that Best Damn Sports Show. Uh-huh. And so, you know, just for fun, I found myself on a break with Magic Johnson. You know, he's running down the middle. I'm on the wing, and I'm like, this is so cool. So Magic does the no look, right? He looks away from me, so I – turn my head, and he does the no-look pass, and it bounced off my head. Oh, big man, keep your eyes open. And I'm like, man.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I bet you're not the first guy you ever hit in the face with a pass, because I think he perfected the art of getting you the ball when you don't expect that you're going
to. If you're not looking at me, Magic, I don't think you're passing it to me.
Do you not know I'm a defensive tackle? I'm not James Worthy over here, brother. You're going to have to hook me up. All right. Happy birthday to Magic, 61 years old today. Take it or shake it. Is coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, DeMarco, let's start with another sports in a bubble question. College basketball should hold the NCAA tournament in a bubble this upcoming season. Take it or shake it.
Oh, take it.
Take it.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to wait. That's next March, right? Or when?
Yep.
You're talking next March, right?
Correct.
Well, then I'll shake it. I take that back. I'll shake it. Hopefully by then
we're through this.
Yeah, there's a vaccine and, you know, this is behind us. But if we're still in the same situation, then absolutely I'll take it. So, yeah.
Yeah, look, they need to hope that they don't need it, but they better have that damn thing ready.
You know
what I'm saying? That this is one of those, let's hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
No doubt, but if
I'm prepared for it, and look, the NCAA tournament, what do we got, 64 teams, and I'm not excluding those ridiculous play-in games, but if we've got 64 teams, make four bubbles. Make a Western bubble, an Eastern bubble, a Southern bubble, and a Midwest bubble, and let's do it, and then we'll get down to the Final Four, and we'll have one spot because it works. But if the plan is, and look, we're talking about the NCAA, so who knows if they have a plan at all. If the plan is just, by March we'll be good, that's what college football thought, and here we are, and two of the most important leagues in the country aren't going to play. You need to have a plan A, which is the bubble, and plan B could be, you know what? we don't need it. Let's just play it straight up.
No doubt. Absolutely.
All right, let's go on to the next one. Steven Strasburg yesterday, DeMarco, was ejected from a Nationals game in which he was not pitching, in which he was not even in the dugout. He was in the stands. More guys will get kicked out this season because umpires can hear everything without fans. Take it or shake it.
Oh, take it. Absolutely.
Angel Hernandez,
Joe West, the guys that think they invented baseball, they got a itchy trigger finger to begin with. Now they can hear everything. Absolutely. You're going to get run for burping.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you see it going on in the NBA, too, that because there are no fans in the stands, because it's just, you know, the 10 guys on the court, the three officials on the court, and then in baseball, you know, usually even a bad crowd, you've got 15, 18,000 people. They're making noise. You can mutter something under your breath. And what you know this as an athlete. What the officials hate more than anything, it's not so much being said, hey, you know, wake up back there, do better. It's not that. What they don't want is for someone else to hear that. They don't want someone else to get a nose, ooh, that guy's getting chewed up, because then they have to react to it. And now everybody can hear everything, so they have to smack these guys down.
You know, to tell you the truth, Travis, I'm scared to death. Well, not scared to death, but I am concerned about that with my job as a sideline analyst. Now the players will be able to hear me talk about them. Yeah, I'm concerned about that. Man, Aaron was terrible on that play. Boy, I'm sorry, Aaron.
Don't say anything bad about Mr. Donald. That's a bad idea. Just leave him alone. Pick somebody else. Leave Mr. Donald out of it. He doesn't seem like he'd respond all that well to that. All right,
and he's only 10 feet away and there's no fence.
Yeah, bad idea. Bad idea for sure. The Suns go 8-0 in the NBA bubble. The Phoenix Suns will make the playoffs next season. Take it or shake it.
I'll take it. Capitalize off what they've done. They're young. They didn't start the year very well, but they ended it on a great note. So they've got no one to blame but themselves for missing the playoffs. So if you feel bad about them going 8-0 in the bubble and they're going home, don't feel bad about the system. Be mad at them. But yeah, I think they're on the rise. I think Devin Booker is a budding superstar, and he's only going to get better from here.
Yeah, this brings me back to something we talked about yesterday. Look at that Phoenix team. They just went 8-0, and we know that Devin Booker is a legit star in this league. DeAndre Ayton is a very, very good player in this team. Monty Williams, the coach of that team, he knows what he's doing. They're going to be good. And the reason I bring that up, the same reason I brought up Steph and Clay and the Warriors next season. Those are two more teams in the West that are not part of the equation right now that 100% will be a part of the equation moving forward. All the more reason that the Lakers need to take care of business this year, because you just don't know what the future holds. And the future holds for them two very good teams in their own division that you're going to have to deal with five times a season.
Yeah.
It never gets any easier.
I feel better about them in the future than I do, say, the Pelicans.
Yeah, well,
Pelicans they're going the wrong way, and it's going to continue to go the wrong way.
If I was giving you the idea of getting a team that's going to be good in a few years, and I said, okay, here are your most important players. You've got a guy like Brandon Ingram, who is good but inconsistent and weighs 106 pounds. Your next most important player is a guy that's a kid. He's 20 years old, terribly athletic, but has a history of injury and putting on weight. And then you've got a point guard who looks like he'd rather be anywhere else other than playing basketball. You like that team?
Right.
I mean,
no, not at all. Yeah. As the Washington Generals, yes. As a contender, no.
Do you get that sense from Lonzo? And it's all it's even when he was here in L.A., I think he's a relatively talented guy. I've never thought that he was as talented as some other people do. I've never gotten the sense that he likes playing basketball. Do you?
Well, you know, at least when he was here, you could tell there was a lot of effort on the defensive end. I don't see anymore. Shooting is one thing. We know that's going to be, you know, a journey for him. But when he was a Laker, there was a lot more effort put in on the defensive end than what I'm seeing right now, which tells me he is completely disconnected. So you might be right.
Yeah,
he may be done with basketball.
He seems like he's disinterested, and that's a bad look. That, you know, hurt is fine, and unskilled, you can kind of work on that. I know he shoots sidearm, and he's trying to fix that, but disinterested is a much harder thing to fix. All right,
yeah.
We saw that George Kittle and Travis Kelce both got big deals yesterday. George Kittle is the number one tight end in the NFL. Take it or shake it.
Oh, take it. from this standpoint.
Take he's the,
that's the number one bargain of the year for what he's given. That was it, 15 mil per, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
What a deal. What a bargain. I mean, he's worth twice that to me. Even when he doesn't, when he's not the focal point of the play or not receiving the football, he is still absolutely dangerous. He's the new Gronk to me. Mm. You know, he can do it all. An inline blocker, he's nasty, he's feisty, he'll stay after you. And in the passing game, he's absolutely deadly. In the route and then after the catch, oh, my God, he's must-see. So, yeah, I mean, that's a bargain. So, yeah, number one tight end in the game.
How close is Kelce? Is Kelce a close second or is there a gap?
You know, he's like the Carmelo Anthony of tight ends. You know, he only does one thing. I mean, he blocks. He'll stand in front of you. You know, he'll draw a guy off. You can split him out and you have to honor it. And that's a way you can remove a guy from the box to run the football. But, you know, he's a receiving tight end. He's a big receiver that's a matchup problem. But in his own right, either way, on game day versus either guy, you've got issues.
How do you think Gronk is going to do in Tampa? Will Gronk be Gronk, or is that the days of him being a difference maker like that gone?
I think Gronk is going to be Gronk, but it's going to be in spots. I think they're going to pick their spots with him, and, you know, it is what it is. I mean, there's a lot of mileage on the body. He's got a lot of injuries he's recovered from. He's familiar with the offense, familiar with Tom Brady, but I don't think you can just go through him like they did in New England. But in key spots, if they need a play in the red zone or to pick up a first down, he's going to be a nightmare.
All right. This weekend in the Farr household, you will be sitting on your couch eating scotch eggs, watching Stipe and Daniel Cormier. Take it or shake it.
Oh, take it. The scotch eggs will be tonight, and it'll be tomorrow, too.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. I'm going to perfect this recipe. And the bacon wrapped. Oh, my God, I can't wait. Oh, that's nice. Going to be tomorrow. But, yeah, I can't wait for this fight, man. This is going to be something. It's weird. Usually there's a black hat and a white hat. There's a villain and the hero in fights. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. But I like both guys. I've got nothing against Stipe. I love DC. But I want DC to win because he's such a cool guy. And – but either way, it's going to be one hell of a fight.
How many scotch eggs are you taking down?
Well, this will be my first outing. So,
Let me change the question a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, how many did you make?
Exactly. I'm making four, you know, so I figure I got at least two, you know. Between three of us, I'm going to take two, and, you know, maybe I'll finish my daughter's.
I'm going to take the over. Whatever you're setting the number at, I'm going to take the over. Okay, one more here. There was a weird moment at the U.S. amateur golf tournament yesterday where a player lost a match because his caddy touched the sand with his hand. The caddy's mistake should cost the player the match. Take it or shake it.
Take it. Did he know the rules?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Did he know the rules? What was Mike Tomlin when he tripped the special teams guy? He knew what he was doing. You know what I mean? I'm not buying that. Come on. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Your caddy is a part of you. So yep. Control your caddy, sir.
That's what the rules say. You just basically said the rule that, look, you are responsible for whatever your caddy does. And here's what I don't get. That there are like three rules in golf that are just universal. Play it where it lies. You only get 14 clubs and don't touch the sand.
Right? Yes.
So those are the three rules that a caddy didn't know that cost. And by the way, they were going to the 18th hole in that match. He gets the hole. He wins the match. And that guy's going home because his caddy was a blockhead.
Wow. If my daughter goes into like a China store and breaks everything, they're not going to say, oh, she's just five. Go. No, they're going to charge me for it.
Yeah.
I'm responsible. Yeah.
Going to need this visa, Mr. Farr, and we're going to run it right now. Lakers are all set. They are the number one seed. Is it going to be Portland? Is it going to be Memphis? And does it matter? That's next on the Morning Show on 710 ESPN.